This is Dr. Laura Calkins of the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, beginning an oral history interview with Colonel Ann Smith. Today's date is the 23rd of June, 2004. I am in the interview room in the Special Collections Building on the campus of Texas Tech in Lubbock, and Colonel Smith is speaking to me by telephone from Jacksonville, Alabama. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
First of all, I'd like to begin, if you agree, with some general biographical information. Ann, where were you born and when?
I was born in Valdosta, Georgia, on the 19th of December, 1930.
Can you tell me a little bit about your parents? First of all, your mother, what was her name?
Her maiden name was Irma, with an I, Mathis.
Is that M-A-T-T-I-S?
No, M-A-T-H-I-S.
Okay, one T. And what was her family background?
Her mother, my grandparents died really before I got to know them. Her mother was a homemaker. Her father was apparently a town wit and a barber and had a book and music shop, and he was a musician.
Now, is this in Georgia as well?
This was in a little town called Quitman, Q-U-I-T-M-A-N,
now,
Georgia.
Where is that, Ann?
Well,
relative to...
If you have a good tailwind, you can spit to Florida.
Okay.
It's just off I-75, about probably 12 to 15 miles from the Florida border.
Okay. And he was, your grandfather then was a, you said, a musician, among so many other
yes.
things. What did he play?
Well, there was an old fiddle in the house, so I guess he fiddled.
Okay. And do you know more about him? What was his name, and how long had the family been in Georgia, South Georgia?
His name was Hiram Mathis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And was this an old Quitman family?
No, I think he came there from Florida.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And
I really know very little about them.
Yeah. And your mother, was she brought up by them?
Yes.
Okay.
She was born in Quitman in the house she grew up in.
Is that house still there, Ann?
Yes.
Do you go down and visit much?
Seldom. I was down for my 50th college reunion in, '01, and I haven't been back since.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But Quitman must be a small place.
Sort of a fly speck on a map.
Yeah.
And it has not gotten any bigger since I left. Wonderful place to grow up.
Right. My family comes from a little place like that, but on both sides, but up in Michigan. So I think I have a little bit of a fellow feeling what you're talking about 2,000 people or so.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that many. And your mother, did she ever work outside the home?
Yes.
What did she do?
My father was ill, and my mother did anything she could to make an honest living.
Mm-hmm.
But she worked in an office in a cotton mill, and then she worked in a hosiery mill, sort of running their little outlet store, and then she worked as an inspector in the mill itself. She was a choir director in the local Methodist church, and then she got a job working for a Presbyterian home in our hometown. It was for senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So she was doing that when she died.
How old was she when she died?
56.
Okay.
She was killed in an accident.
Oh, what kind of accident? Can you
car.
Say? Oh, okay.
She was taking one of the residents to a doctor and ran a stop sign and got hit.
About what year would that have been?
63.
You said your father had
No,
been
I'm sorry, 64.
64. You said that your father had been ill. Had he had a career before he became ill?
He was in the Navy in World War I and never got over it.
Is that right? Where did he serve, do you know?
He served on shipboard, and he was on a troop ship, as I recall, between the United States and France. And during that time, he had to have a shipboard. He had a kidney removed.
Mm-hmm.
And after he got out of the Navy, he taught at private schools, but he only had 2 years of college, and started degree became important. So as I was growing up, he did a lot of pickup things.
Yes.
He was very frustrated because I think mm-hmm. he was very smart, but he couldn't use his smarts, and he certainly couldn't help me with algebra.
Did he make a valiant effort, though?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Daddy, that's not what they said I should do. Mumble, mumble.
Right.
During the war, he was head of the OPA office in my hometown, and that really was the most productive work he ever had.
And, of course, this is the Second World War.
Yes.
But,
and he tried terribly to get back in the Navy, and he was too old and really was not well enough. He had heart trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then with one kidney missing, that didn't help. And he died in 1952 when he was, I think he was about 58.
You said that he never pretty much got over World War One and his experience. Do you mean physically?
No, not traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
It was the accomplishment of it.
Oh, is that right? I see.
Yeah,
what you mean.
Yeah, he was happy in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And when he ran the OPA office during the 40s, that was also sort of a highlight for him?
Well, it was the best paying job he ever had. And it was of necessity that my mother went to work. And it was when, during my freshman year in college, they told me, at the end of my college that year, they told me that they could not send me back to school. And I said, I'm going. So I did.
And how did you plan to manage it without...
I didn't know at the time.
You just set your face toward doing it and thought,
yes,
things will fall in place.
I applied for scholarships. I worked while I was in school. It was they didn't pay much, but the best thing happened was when one of my former Sunday school teachers stopped by my house one day and said, I understand you're having trouble. My sister and I have some money that we are not using. Would you like to borrow it?
No kidding.
Repay it at your leisure with no interest.
Did this just come out of nowhere for you, Ann?
Yes.
You must have been extraordinarily moved.
Oh, I was. And says some good things come from going to Sunday school.
Apparently they do.
And she had been my Sunday school teacher all through my high school years.
Had she been friendly with your folks?
In my town, everybody knew everybody.
Sure, sure.
She was a maiden lady
mm-hmm.
who lived with her widowed sister in one of the nicest houses in town. And she was totally unprepossessing.
Mm-hmm. As you think back on it, Ann, why do you think she did that? Why do you think she and her sister decided to do that for you?
Well, they knew me. Mm-hmm. They'd known me all along. She told me that I ought to be a lawyer because I'd argue with anybody on anything when she taught me in Sunday school.
Uh-huh.
And a small church family, and they were good people, and I needed something.
Yeah. Did you pay them back, Ann?
Of course.
How long did it take?
I graduated from college in 51, and I think I paid it back in 55.
No kidding.
I did it. Now, you must realize, it cost absolutely almost nothing to go to a state school mm-hmm. in South Georgia at that time,
mm-hmm.
but it was still a large amount of money for me.
Yes, and it's cash. I mean, you had to have it up front, sort of.
So
thing.
I saved and saved until I could pay it off at one time.
Let me ask you, Ann, a little bit about your youth, because it seems in the material that you sent us that you were quite an industrious gal as a youngster.
I liked money.
You liked money.
And I wasn't going to get it at home. I tell children now my first allowance was a dime.
Right, and they're going, what?
Uh-huh. Right. What is a dime?
That's right. Yeah, you got to have at least $100 to go to the mall anymore.
Oh, that's right.
So what kinds of things did you do, Ann? And how did you get set up with this, selling bottles to the drugstore?
Well, the word was just out. Uh-huh. At that time, the drugstore used reusable glass bottles that had ounces marked on them.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so the neighbors would give them to me. And, you know, they knew I wanted them, so I would take them to the drugstore every now and then and get a penny each. And then you could sell newspapers to the fish market, and you could sell coat hangers to the laundry, to the dry cleaner.
So you would go around
and collect stuff.
And how did you, where did you keep your inventory? Did you have a little place in the garage or in your room?
I just, when I got some, I took it in.
Oh, you didn't wait.
No, I didn't. I amass a fortune that way.
You wanted to be liquid, so you took those in right away and had cash.
And then two of my friends and I, they were a year ahead of me in school, mm-hmm. and I guess this was probably when I was a freshman in high school, mm-hmm. around that era, maybe a little younger. But on Saturday, we would take our card tables and go down to the part of town where people came in from the country. You remember how that happened?
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
And we would sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
what kind of stuff?
Clothes.
Where did you get them?
Begged them. People gave them to us. Some of them were things I'd outgrown, but in those days it was called a rummage sale,
mm-hmm.
the forerunner of yard sales.
And you were pioneering in this?
Oh, no, we had some competition across the street that we didn't like at all. We had one side of the street, and they had the other side.
Oh, no. And was there price wars back and forth? Or?
No, we sort of had a different sort of stuff.
Different lines of...
one day I was trying to hawk my wares, mm-hmm. and this woman looked at me and says, "Us don't buy rummage."
Is that right?
So you're a real put-down.
Yes, that's cold. That's cold. But you persevered, it seems.
Yes.
And
and I would make a couple dollars or so. And then when I got a Social Security card, mm-hmm. I worked at the dime store for $2 a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you were quite young when you took your Social Security card.
I was 12 when I got a Social Security card.
Which is amazing. That would have been 1942. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a better job slinging hamburgers in a local grocery store, and my mother would not let me wear but one set of clothes because she didn't want all of them smelling like grease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a smart lady, too. Were your parents proud of you with all your endeavors? And
I think they were. You know, they didn't say much about it, but I usually, when I came home from work, I'd stop and pick something up for my mother. You know, I made enough money one day to buy a pair of skates for me,
mm-hmm.
and that was, you know, I used my money wisely.
Was that something you had been kind of, you know, had your eye on, those skates?
Well, I always had skates.
Oh.
There wasn't much to do in South Georgia but skate.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, being a serious Christian, and I don't mean that lightly, insisted that I tithe everything. So when she gave me my dime allowance, I had to put a penny aside for church.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was instilled in me very early.
Mm-hmm. And your father, he was from a different denomination. So.
Yes, my mother was Presbyterian, my father was Methodist.
Uh-huh.
His father was a Methodist preacher.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Also down in Quitman? Or?
Granddaddy retired there. He had preached there twice. But at that time in the Methodist Church, they moved preachers even more than they do today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he had been at one time a circuit rider, but pretty much all in South Georgia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And tell me about yourself as a student. You mentioned the algebra before. Were there particular subjects that you did very well at? This is sometimes a tough one.
I was quick.
Okay.
I did not know how to study until I was in graduate school. I didn't have to because I could get by with a quick memory,
mm-hmm.
and so I missed out on learning a lot. But I guess English and history.
Those attracted you?
Were my best subjects. I took 4 years of math in high school, and because I had done that when I got to college, I didn't have to take freshman math.
Mm-hmm.
Enough had stuck that I could do well on the placement test.
Was that unusual for the girls in high school to take all 4 years of math?
My three best friends and I guess we didn't have an academic track, but we were about as academic as you could get. I took a couple years of Latin,
mm-hmm.
and then pretty much it was we didn't have very many electives. The only thing I really blew was chemistry. And I have since realized I probably could have enjoyed it because I think it's so well organized. I mean, chemistry makes sense if you can get the fundamentals.
Right, you got to get A before you can get to B, C, and D.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any teachers that were particularly memorable, either in a good way or in a bad way? Or influential for you?
Thinking back, probably the one I enjoyed most was the school librarian who taught English.
Mm-hmm.
I had the same teacher for English and Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a math teacher who I thought a great deal of at the time. Excuse me. But one time she accused me of something I did not do and would not believe me when I told her and had proof. And that just colored my attitude.
Right, soured things for you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And let me ask you a little bit about what was going on in Quitman, just in terms of social relations. Can you tell me anything about how race played out there? Were African Americans living in town?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Almost at the end of every street,
mm-hmm.
there would be African Americans living there. We knew them pretty much as maids, nurses for children.
Mm-hmm.
There were some my father, I think, was an unreconstructed Confederate.
Was he really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course, he was not involved in the war. He wasn't that old.
Right.
But he had, like many Southerners of that era,
mm-hmm.
he was totally against African Americans as a group and had wonderful friends as individuals.
Sure.
And I, one time I came home from college all smart and said, and it was during bad times in Georgia when we had two governors and it was school integration was beginning to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that I wouldn't mind going to school with an African-American. I said, Daddy hit the roof.
Did he really?
And I said, I think everybody has a right to an education. So that sort of set some of the tone.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a product of his time.
Mm-hmm. What about your mom?
My mother was more broad-minded,
mm-hmm.
I would say, than Daddy. And in the last job that she had, there were a number of African-Americans who worked there. And obviously, she treated them very well because when she died, they went together and sent flowers to her funeral.
Mm-hmm. So she had some kind of pleasant or good, healthy interactions with them.
Well, my grandmother on my father's side always had a cook, so I had a very personal relation with individuals,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
by just being around her cooks. So,
right.
But things were as they were then.
That's right.
You took for granted the way things were until you got older, I believe, and got away.
Mm-hmm. When you went up to Valdosta to college, was that your idea, or were your folks?
Well, it's only 18 miles from my hometown.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it was a matter of go where I could go.
Okay.
I had no interest in going to a big school. And I couldn't have anyway. And it was, at the time I started, it was Georgia State College for Women. And it was made co-ed my senior year.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you intend to study?
I first thought I wanted to study secretarial science, and then I hit bookkeeping. That did that.
So bookkeeping became a love, or?
Oh, no.
I see. It was the problem. It was the roadblock.
It was an anathema.
Okay, I've got you now.
Being a not very conscientious home worker, I let myself get behind way too early and couldn't catch up.
So you shifted then to a different major.
I took all of the courses to qualify for a teaching certificate, and all the education and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not want a degree in education. I did not want that to be my major, so I have a BS in English.
Now, why were you trying to avoid getting an education degree per se?
It just did not appeal to me. It seemed like even at that time, it did not seem a prestigious degree.
Really?
To me.
And was it sort of that you didn't see yourself being a teacher?
Oh, no. I saw myself being a teacher. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want a degree in education.
So you wanted a more traditional...
A more liberal arts.
Liberal arts.
But I did not take any language because for the teaching, you had to have a good bit of science.
Mm-hmm.
So I was weighted that way, so that's why I have a BS.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. That's why it's a BS?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. While you were there, you indicated that in the first several years you were there, the first 3 years, that it was a women's college.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about the sort of tenor of being on campus. What was it like? Was the faculty both male and female?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It was a very small, it was a small school.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we had 300 students. I'm not sure, the mix of town students and
mm-hmm.
dormitories. Our president was a man,
mm-hmm.
and I had several male professors.
Did you have any really good professors while you were there?
The one, who meant the most to me and did the most for me was a physical education professor who taught dance. She broadened my horizons more than anyone.
What was her name? Do you remember, Anne?
Phyllis Valenti, V-A-L-E-N-T-I.
Tell me about her.
Well, she was fascinating because she had studied with Martha Graham. And she had, I think, graduated from LSU with a degree in English and had gone through the Bennington dance era, which doesn't mean anything, but it meant something. And she introduced me to books like Thomas Wolfe. And she... was a crossword puzzle worker, which I am,
mm-hmm.
also. And just, I had never danced before.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that that was my great love.
Is that right?
One of my piano teachers said, well, you can't play music, but you can sure move to it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Modern dance.
Mm-hmm. Describe, if you can, for somebody who wouldn't be familiar with that period, what What was the sort of thinking behind modern dance at the time you were studying?
Well, it was a breakaway from the traditional ballet, of course, and it was not necessarily pretty, as in ballet is. You were usually barefooted, and there were often angles and use of the body in strange ways. And I never could have been a ballet dancer because I'm sort of long and gangly.
Too tall.
But it was, everybody, I think, needs something at which he or she excels in his little pond. And in my little pond at that time, I was the best there was in that little pond at that thing. And it was sort of like finding yourself.
And she took a particular interest in you, not just in terms of the dance, but also, it seems, in terms of what you were reading.
Yes.
And getting...
And ideas.
Ideas, exactly.
She was a very smart woman. And she wasn't your average physical education teacher.
Okay.
She didn't teach swimming or tennis or golf or anything else. She taught dance.
She was a specialist.
Yes.
How did she come to be there? Did you ever find that out? How had she come to be at Valdosta?
I have no idea. If I ever knew, I don't remember. They probably advertised for somebody, and she answered.
Yes, yes. I wonder what kinds of things did you wear when you were dancing?
Leotard.
Were there did you wear black or?
Well,
whatever you could lay hands on.
Yeah.
Really?
And, of course, when we danced in public, we had various costumes. We did they had never had dance recital, a program there.
Mm-hmm.
And during my sophomore year, we did one. And she choreographed it, and she danced, too.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That must have been a thrill.
It was. The thrill was that she asked me to work with her the summer after my freshman year, so she could have somebody to choreograph on.
So you were sort of the model for her to work the movements out?
Yeah.
And to sort of
to
visualize
see how they worked, looked on somebody else. And as I progressed, if she was not there, she would have me hold her classes. But that was all freshman stuff, you know.
Which was no problem for you at that point?
No.
What kind of training did you do? You know, ballet people work many, many hours every day, and they can't eat certain things, and, you know, there are all these regimens. Did you have anything like that?
No. I probably was practicing every day. We had the school had a lot of various clubs, and we had a dance club that met twice a week, and so we got a lot of practice there, and I must say, my studies probably suffered.
Because you love doing this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was also active in the drama club. And one day I was going to be cast in a play. And the drama professor says, well, you can dance if it doesn't interfere with the play. And the dance professor says, you can be in the play if it doesn't interfere with dance.
And I'm sure both of them were very keen that you choose their area to specialize.
And the dance the drama professor was also one of my absolute favorites. She was dramatic and had been on Broadway.
No kidding.
And looked sort of like a taller version of the Duchess of Windsor.
What was her name? Do you remember her name at all, Anne?
Louise Sawyer.
And tell me a little bit about her. She sounds like a quite an intriguing
person. I don't know how she got to South Georgia either.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Someone will have to look into this.
After she retired, she was living in Illinois, Monmouth, Illinois. And I was stationed at Fort Sheridan, Illinois, and I was having a party, and I invited her to come, and she couldn't because she was in the hospital having her feet operated on. So I asked her what she drank, and so I showed up at the hospital with her to drink.
What did she drink?
Bourbon.
There you go.
And then years later, I mean, since I've been here and retired, a couple moved to our university. She's an English, I call her Dr. Word and him Dr. Number. And she mentioned one night that they had lived when they taught at Monmouth. And I said, did you know Louise Sawyer? She said, yes.
No kidding.
Tremendous small world.
Oh, yes. Things like that just give you the chills practically. How had she known her?
Well, Miss Sawyer lived there, and they were teaching there, and their paths crossed some way.
Did she give you kind of an update, or?
Yes. And I think she had died by then.
Those professors sound extraordinarily influential and important. Were you sad to leave college? You graduated in, what, 1951?
Yes.
Were you kind of saddened by having to leave? Or were you ready?
Yes, I was saddened because I knew, for one thing, I knew I was never going to be able to dance again, really dance, as I had there. And, you know, you have to realize, as I said, it was a small pond, but I was in it. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, and I was delighted to get out of high school.
Yes.
But I was, because I knew I was going to college.
Right.
And that makes a difference. And I was determined I was going to live on campus because that was part of college to me. And I did. I never commuted. And I was sad to leave college. I had good friends and a close-knit group.
Had there been sororities on campus?
No.
Not at all?
No.
I wondered about that. Why were there no sororities?
Well, probably. I don't know. Really, I never thought about it, but most of us probably couldn't have afforded to be in sororities anyway.
Okay.
If they had had them. And, you know, sometimes the poor can be awfully snobbish.
Had the decision by the administration to take the college co-ed changed things substantially for you? You would have been a senior that year, I guess.
They didn't really change substantially, but we had to make room for these young men who had not been part of the system before.
Yeah.
You know, one of them had to be who's who just because one of them had to be.
Got it.
And some of them were older. There were veterans going to school then. And we adapted.
Was that, do you think, part of why the administration decided to accept men? Because there were guys with GI Bill money following them and they needed the money? Was that part of the discussion, or do you remember it all?
We weren't privy to the decision-making discussions.
And none of that sort of leaked out to students?
And they changed the name of the college while I was there. It was Georgia State Women's College. It became Valdosta State College. And now it's Valdosta State University.
And it's huge.
It's huge school.
Yeah, it's huge now.
They have football and all that. You know,
that's right.
Fraternities and sororities.
They sure do. Yes, ma'am. I used to live in Georgia, so I know.
They have doctoral programs.
Yes, it's a doctoral one research university now.
Where did you live?
I actually lived up in the Atlanta area.
Well, where else?
Yeah, I know. But I taught at a very small private school up there in Atlanta, and we were very aware of where our students, most of whom were from Georgia, were going to graduate school, and a number of them from South Georgia went back to Valdosta State for graduate school.
When I was growing up in South Georgia, I was convinced that when you died, you went to Atlanta. At that time in my life, there was only one Riches. It was downtown, and it was the store. And if you were really good, you spent eternity in Riches.
In Riches, Had you had much opportunity to get up to Atlanta?
Well, during the course of my checkered career, I've lived there twice.
Mm-hmm.
My brother lives in Buckhead, and I was there Monday, and I'll go back next Monday. My dentist has been in Atlanta, and I just get there. I like Atlanta. I don't want to live there.
Yeah, it's hard to live there.
But I like eating there and being there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably there on an average of once, twice a month.
Wow.
For some reason.
Sure.
It's only 2 hours.
Yes, that's right. Just straight across I-20 there.
Yeah.
Were you able to get up there much when you were young, say before you graduated from college?
No.
You go to Atlanta at all?
No.
Did it seem to be?
I had an aunt and uncle who lived in Decatur.
Yes.
And we got there every now and then, but the only reason I went to Atlanta, pretty much my brother had a knee problem, and he was going to an orthopedic doctor up there, and occasionally Daddy and I would take him up. But that's, you know, Atlanta was not, it was a two-day trip.
Sure, absolutely. Did your folks have a car most of this time?
Yeah. Didn't always run.
yeah, I can believe that. I can absolutely believe that. But your dad was well enough to have a car and use it.
Yes.
Okay.
Before he died, he was. I don't know whether he might have had Alzheimer's, but he had hardening of the arteries.
Mm-hmm.
And it just affected a lot. It was very sad because Daddy was very smart, very quick, and I think that was one of his frustrations was he couldn't do what his mind wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, even as a younger man.
You've mentioned your brother. He's quite a bit younger than
9 years.
Okay. Did you have to pretty much take care of him along the way, or did your mom handle that? You were free to...
Well, I thought I did. It's fine.
did he go to college?
Yes.
Where did he go?
Georgia State.
Okay. And up in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay. And has he lived there always? In the
he
Atlanta
left
area?
Quitman and moved to Atlanta.
And that was the end of that?
And that was that.
Okay. I can see that. He lives in Buckhead now, so he's quite... Sounds quite firmly entrenched there.
He worked for several years writing for Atlanta Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a job at Channel 5, WAGA, in Atlanta, and was there for 18 years. And then he worked for CNN.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he still working?
No. CNN, they had a reorganization.
They sure did.
Somebody didn't like his boss,
mm-hmm.
fired his boss, and it was obvious that he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Because he was very associated with her, and it's sort of like, I think, a football coach. Somebody new comes in, wants his people.
Yes, right.
And so, but he had a good run there. He was there almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, this happened just last year.
Oh, is that right?
And He did you ever see Talk Back Live?
Yes, I did. Yeah. It used to be on in the middle of the day.
Yeah, he was the original producer of that.
Okay. Uh-huh.
That's the level at which he was working there.
Wow.
And every time his boss got he worked for a woman,
mm-hmm.
considerably younger than he.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she got a promotion, he wound up moving.
So he was fairly closely linked in the organization,
yes.
to her.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And he has no bitterness about it.
And is he then retired, basically, at this point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He does some freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's enjoying being able to travel.
Sure.
Do what he wants to do.
Sure. And as you say, Atlanta's, of course, a gorgeous place to be. A little hard, I think, to live there because of the crowds, but a beautiful place to be, certainly.
Well, they tried to get him to move to Washington one time, and he said no. You know, all his contacts were in Atlanta. Everybody he knows is in Atlanta.
Sure. He's been there so long, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And let me ask you a little bit more about your time as you were leaving college then. This would be in, 1951. What did you have in mind to do? Did you think that you were going to get a teaching position?
I did.
Where did you end up getting a job?
Atlanta.
No kidding. That was your first... That was your first job? Whereabouts?
It was a little school that was a county school, and they brought it into the city system. And it was off Bankhead Highway somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And it was a grammar school. It had probably two first, second, third, and fourth grades. I'm not sure it had two of five and six. It was in a blue-collar area
mm-hmm.
where a lot of the people worked in mills and had lost their jobs. So they were really financially. I had maybe one child whose father had something that remotely resembled a white-collar job.
But those were some hard times for
yes,
know, mill
were.
People. Yeah.
And it was, I was 20, and I thought I knew more than the principal, and I let her know it, which was not a smart thing to do. I was not nearly as smart as I thought I was.
But were you still smarter than she was? I mean, looking back, were you still?
Oh, yeah. Maybe not about her job.
Right.
Basically, I'd smarter than she was, but... they after 1 year, they did not invite me back. They yeah. didn't fire me mid-year.
Right. they just didn't renew your contract, as they say.
Yes.
Now, this was her little fiefdom then, and she could pretty much control who worked there?
Well, I don't know that. I'm certain her recommendation mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then... I was at sort of loose ends, and I worked at Davison's a while, Macy's now,
mm-hmm.
and they had me working in middle-aged women's house dresses, and I was not very successful.
Now, were you not successful because of where they placed you, or was retail just not going to be your thing?
Well, I should not have been. I, at 21, should mm-hmm. not have. And skinny,
mm-hmm.
ought not to have been trying to sell house dresses.
Were you on commission or how?
Yes,
money?
And I didn't make anything. Then they decided to put me on straight salary,
uh-huh.
and I worked in the shoe department selling handbags.
How'd that go?
That was much better.
That was better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, I could see a pair of shoes and go down and say, can I find you a pocketbook to go with that? And the head of that department asked me if I would be interested in going into a retail training program, and I said no. I wanted to be in the Army. I had already, as soon as I got out of college, I tried to go in the Army, but I wasn't old enough. You had to be 21.
Now, Ann, why were you pursuing that? How did that come up in your head as something that you could do?
It started back in high school when I read a book about a woman who was in the Navy, and it fascinated me. It was a first-hand thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my senior year in college, the Army sent a recruiter to talk to college students. The Army decided they were going to keep women then, and they needed more officers, and they were offering direct commissions to college graduates.
So someone came to Valdosta?
Somebody came to Valdosta. She was a woman from Georgia anyway, and she was a major. Her name was, I remember this, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It was Marion Rhine, R-H-I-N-E. And she fascinated me because, one, she had been a dancer.
And, no kidding.
Yes, and two, she had these beautiful long red fingernails.
She sounds like a dreamboat.
And what she had to say was interesting to
uh-huh,
me.
Uh-huh.
So as soon as I graduated, I applied, and they said, you've got to wait till you're 21. So I went off to work.
I see. So you weren't then completely heartbroken when your position wasn't renewed at the school there in Atlanta?
No.
Because you had this other plan kind of brewing in the background.
And after I left Davison's, I was looking for something that I could make enough money to eat. And I called the phone company. Everybody worked at the phone company sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have hired me, but they wanted me for a training program. And I said, that's not fair. I don't want to waste your money being trained when I want to go into the Army. So then I went to everybody else's place, retail credit company,
mm-hmm.
and worked there until the whole Army thing got straightened out.
And that was...
53.
Okay, and that was pending... you had, by then, of course, you were 21, 22.
As soon as I got to be 21, as soon as I was 21,
mm-hmm.
I reapplied mm-hmm. and filled out all the paperwork and had a physical and didn't hear anything and went back again, and they said the physical was more, they'd lost my physical. It was more than 120 days old, so I had to have another one.
Okay, uh-huh.
And it kept delaying and delaying.
Right. And paperwork problems.
I called my mother one time, and I said, I bet if I tried to enlist, they would take me tomorrow. And she said, don't you dare. You work too hard to get through college, not to take advantage of what college offered. And then when I finally got the papers, they had been dated months before. They just hadn't mailed them to me.
No kidding.
And I called her and I said, this is Lieutenant Smith if she wants to be. What do you mean if she wants to be? So I went off to the Army.
Your first choice, though, had been the Navy.
My first choice had been the Navy. And I was living in Atlanta.
Right.
The Navy recruiting office was in Macon, and you had to pay your own way.
Ooh, okay.
And the Air Force and the Army were in Atlanta. And the Navy required a 4-year commitment and said you may be promoted to after 2 years. The Air Force required 3. The Army required 2 and said you will be promoted. I heard those nuances.
Mm. Yes. So you went for what looked like the best deal.
Yes. And then this mental process said, if you don't do it and your life doesn't go well, you will always wonder. And if you do it and you don't like it, it's only 2 years.
And did you actually thought that out?
Oh, yeah.
At the time?
Yeah.
Wow. So many people kind of stumble into things. It sounds like this was a very much a rational decision that you had in front of you, and you evaluated everything.
Well, I figured I'd been in college 4 years. That wasn't long.
That went by pretty quickly.
Yes.
do you remember your first orders, getting your orders to report?
Yeah. I didn't know a thing they said.
Right.
They had these strange abbreviations in them, EDCSA and things like that. I couldn't say them, so I didn't know what they meant.
Did you get the idea, though, that they wanted you to show up somewhere?
Yes.
Okay.
Fort Lee.
Okay, Fort Lee. Huh?
And I had never been on an overnight train. I did not know what to wear, and so I got there dressed the way I'd get dressed to go somewhere in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite the talk. I had a black plain dress and a hat, and I was known as the one in the hat.
There weren't a lot of other incoming women then dressing as nicely as you did, is that?
Wearing hats. It was a little pillbox, a black pillbox.
Cute. tell me about arriving at Fort Lee. How did you get from the train station out to the post?
Taxi.
Okay. Uh-huh. Do you remember those first few days, Ann?
Oh, yes. I definitely remember those first days.
Can you tell me about them?
Before uniforms, even.
Yes.
Well, I remember one day I was out pulling weeds by the orderly room when the commander, who was a major, came out. That woman scared me to death for a while. And I didn't know to get up and salute. I didn't know how to do any of that.
Right.
And... there were, in my particular class, we had several people who got direct commissions from being NCOs. And then we had some like me who were just off the street. At the same time, there was an OCS class going through with us. And we had to be in 2 separate barracks, and we weren't supposed to talk to each other because we were officers and they were enlisted people.
No kidding. Even though they were in OCS?
Yes. And finally, it dawned on people that we were going to have to work together 2 months from now, so they better let us talk to each other.
So they kind of broke the barrier a little
yes.
bit? Yes. Okay.
And when I, the uniforms were dreadful tan chambray dresses that had to be starched. And the first time I put that thing on, and I've been reminded of this in since years, I stood in the mirror and it looked at myself in the mirror and admired myself and said, "Look at me, I'm a soldier." Now, based on old World War II movies, mm-hmm. I had some serious misconceptions about being in the Army. I thought everybody had a Jeep sitting outside the door, and you just got in it and ran off somewhere.
Right, uh-huh.
And our commander took us in one of the first orientations we had. She said, "And you ladies can also wash out." That is the first time I had heard that I could wash out, and it hadn't dawned on me that I was going to go through 20 weeks of training. I thought I would just go walk in and walk out.
And be there and be in it.
Yes.
Okay, without a kind of breaking. Right, so you started to get the sense of the structure that was going to be imposed.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. They had a course then called a WAC company officers course. Uh-huh. And it was designed for us to go out and learn how to work in a WAC detachment. We learned supply and personnel, and we all had to take a class in teaching and public speaking, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we didn't do that enlisted people do was KP.
Is that right?
We picked up cigarette butts by flashlight.
Did you really?
Sure.
Did you have weapons training at all?
Not then.
Okay. Later on?
Yes.
Okay.
At one time it was voluntary, and then when I commanded the training battalion, it was mandatory. Everybody took weapons training.
But when you first came in, that wasn't immediately on the agenda, the training agenda.
I can't remember whether we had it for familiarization or not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, but I can't be definite about that.
Now, Anne, while you were in the this basic training period, did you have any outdoor skills being taught to you, like orientation, bivouac, and all that?
No, okay. We studied map reading, but it wasn't practical. We learned how to read a map and all that sort of thing. We had physical training, and we marched. We marched everywhere.
I was going to say, how much marching did you do? A lot?
Anytime we went anywhere as a group, we were marching.
Wow.
We could walk to the PX, but every week, mm-hmm. the whole training center marched down the street in front of the commander. It was called March Out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that. We had some swimming.
Really?
Yeah. It was a pool. Well, of course, it was summer. And I don't recall there being an indoor pool there. But most people could swim.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few of them who had some instruction. The rest of it just swam.
Mm-hmm. How big was the class?
23.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Did you make friends?
Yeah.
Do you remember any of those gals, where they were from, or did you see them later on as your career?
Well, we crossed paths a lot,
uh-huh.
being because we stayed in the WAC pond.
Sure.
And we had a reunion here when the museum was here. We had it at Fort McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big reunion, and several of my classmates came back, and I got to see them. One time I was in San Antonio, and two of them were there, and we had lunch together.
Was that as part of another reunion that you
No, I was out on a conference with a friend of mine.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And you saw them?
Well, one of them had been at the reunion,
uh-huh.
And I told her I was coming, and
sure.
Then she brought the other one in. The other one was one who had not completed training. She had washed out.
Washed out, as they say.
She couldn't walk. Couldn't march.
No kidding.
Yeah, she just could not stay in step. She just was a... In essence, a motor moron.
And was that the basis of her?
I think it was.
No kidding.
Marching was very important.
Mm-hmm. And
you were going to train troops, you had to be able to do the things that you were training the troops to do.
Right, and she couldn't get a hold of that part.
Uh-uh.
Huh.
We tried.
Uh-huh. You probably had absolutely no problem, though, with dance and all the discipline that you'd had from that.
Marching was my best thing in the Army.
For your whole career?
For my whole career.
I'm certain that we're going to find evidence that there are other things you were very good at. And
well, it was probably my favorite thing. You know,
you liked
get out on a parade ground, uh-huh. And lead a parade is just great fun.
You had a good time with that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. When you would do the march outs, would different classes all march together?
Everybody, no. The officers marched in one group, and uh-huh. Each company of basic trainees marched together.
How many WAC companies of trainees? Any idea?
Three companies of basic trainees, I believe, uh-huh. And a leadership company, who were people who had been identified as during basic training as potential leaders.
How were they identified? Do you know? Or did you know?
By their trainers.
Okay. So just they just recognize something in these individuals?
Okay. Somebody who obviously had leadership abilities and who stood out
for
various reasons. So.
Did you get picked for any of that, Ann?
No, leaders were picked from the enlistees.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Right. And your experience then with BASIC was overall a good one?
Yeah, it was good.
Did you have fun?
Well, yes, and looking back on it.
Right, but at the time?
I didn't hate it.
Okay.
There were very few days I was unhappy.
Okay, uh-huh. So most of the time you thought, well, this isn't too bad.
The only thing that really bothered me is they gave us a map reading test,
uh-huh.
And I was one of two people who passed it, and I made 98.
Wow.
And they made us retake the test, and they wouldn't let my 98 stand, and I made lower on the second one than I did on the first one.
That seems hardly fair.
That's right.
Yeah. There's something a little wrong there.
Uh-huh. Who said the Army's fair?
That's right. Nobody. Well, did you learn a lesson from that, Ann, or did you just kind of think, well, that's a little bump in the road? No.
That was a bump in the road. I couldn't change it.
No. How did you come out of BASIC? Were you did you think prepared for an assignment? Were you anxious to get on with it?
Yes, I was,
uh-huh.
And I stayed at Fort Lee, so you were in a very nurturing environment because I was a lieutenant, second lieutenant in a world of second lieutenants. And everybody there had, almost all of them, had been through what we had been through. And all the time we were there, we were seeing them around.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we were the pariahs of the bunch.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because we were students.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but when I moved into my first assignment, which was basic trainees, the people I had been seeing all the time were there as the other officers, and they helped us.
So it was would you say almost collegial in the sense
yes.
that people were helping each other,
yes,
rather than adversarial.
And the three companies of basic trainees were not particularly competitive with each other. We were all friends. We knew each other.
And your first assignment then was to join sort of the staff, if you will, of the training faculty?
Well, each company had a company commander and several platoons. Each platoon had a platoon officer. That's mm-hmm. what I was.
And
so I was responsible. Yeah, I taught them a lot, went to drill with them, inspected them. They were mine.
And how many classes did you have in that post? Do you remember?
Well, we probably had probably about 25 or 30 in a platoon. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I taught them all their military courtesy and was always involved with drill. The enlisted people were the drill instructors at the time,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't drill sergeants as we know them today. But we were always with those trainees. If somebody else was teaching them, I was sitting in the back of the room.
No kidding.
Yes, I was a constant presence. All of us were.
Sure. How many others had this kind of assignment that you worked with on a daily basis? Was it a group of four or five who
yeah.
would handle everything?
Yeah, three, four, or five. I don't
sure.
remember.
And was this something you liked doing? It sounds like you fit right into that.
Yeah. Yes, I liked it. I did it for a year,
mm-hmm.
and it during that time we moved from Fort Lee to Fort McClellan, and things just expanded at Fort McClellan. Many, many more people. By that time we had more troops coming in, and people. It was a big thing. We got a new training center, and they recruited a great number of people. So it was a big change.
Now, that change happened, am I right in thinking, 54?
Yeah, 54.
Okay, and what was driving that change in expansion? Was it because of the Korean involvement? Was it?
No, Korea was, you know, over by then.
Sure.
I think all along the Army has looked at, can we use more women?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember, you know, when you're a second lieutenant, you don't know a lot about what's going on.
Right.
You see the
right.
end result.
Right.
And we just had a flood of trainees coming in.
When you made that move from Virginia down to Alabama, did things change for you in terms of the assignment, or were you still doing the same kind of work?
I was doing the same kind of work in a different environment.
Okay.
A much, much... different. We had open bay barracks, old World War II barracks at Fort Lee. We came down here and had new barracks that had partitions in them, and we had new buildings and a big mess hall. So there were definite changes.
And all to the good, it sounds.
Yeah, well, we didn't think so at the time.
Why was that?
Well, because we thought we couldn't stand those petitions in the barracks because we couldn't go in and look and see everything at one time.
Okay.
And we thought it would be spoiling the trainees.
Did it turn out that it softened them up too much, or did it turn out to be okay?
No, it was fine.
Was that the only thing that was problematical for you
in
making that transition down to Fort McClellan?
The worst thing that happened was that I was moved from my original company to another company, and that was not a happy time for me.
Why was that?
Well, I didn't care for the commander.
Mm-hmm.
She had been the commander of the leader's company, and now she was commanding a basic training company, and it was somewhat beneath her, I think. And so...
Did she act as if it was beneath her?
I don't know. I thought she did.
Yeah.
Memories.
Yes, right. Sometimes you get it. You just get an impression.
And when I was first assigned to her, I had lived in the BOQ with her before.
Mm-hmm.
And in the BOQ, almost everybody was first name. She was a captain. I was still a second lieutenant then, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me in, and she said, "I hope you won't take advantage of having known me as Mary Ann." And I wanted to throw up. I knew I was supposed to call her ma'am. I knew she was a captain.
But she was just kind of laying the wood to you a little
yes.
bit there.
Mm-hmm.
I
didn't appreciate her assumption that I would.
Right, right. And her correcting you in advance.
Yes.
Right.
Call a preemptive strike.
Exactly. I mean, after all, you had been teaching military courtesy.
Yes.
I mean, you knew it. You knew the regs. Well, other than that little rough patch with her, did you settle into the new company all right?
Oh, yes. I settled into the new company, and a great day happened when she was replaced by my best friend.
Oh, how did that happen? Who was your best friend?
Her name's Lorraine Rossi. And she was my best friend in the company. You know,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes best friends are situational.
True.
She is still a very good friend.
Now, how do you spell her last name?
Rossi.
And you had obviously already known her.
We had been in the first company together.
Mm-hmm.
She was there when I got there, and she stayed in the company. And I was gone away to Atlanta for the weekend. When I came home, somebody I knew said, if you could pick your own company commander, who would it be? I said, Sissy. And she said, that's who it is. And I could not have been more delighted.
And you thought, yes.
Yes. And the thing is that all of us knew her and knew her well, all of us in the company, and she did not have one minutes problem. Some of the people, one of the other officers in the company was one of her truly best friends. They'd gone to high school together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just as, we were all so happy to have her.
Now, was she also given an advance in rank?
She was a first lieutenant.
Okay.
She already was one.
Okay. And at what point were you looking toward making first lieutenant?
18 months after I went in the Army was the time.
Mm-hmm. So you would have been coming up on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And were you also giving thought to your 2-year commitment and whether you?
By that time I had already asked to be regular Army.
You wanted to get off of this contract thing.
And they had a system by which you had a year of probation before they would let you be regular Army. So as soon as I could, I applied for it. I was happy in the Army.
And you couldn't think of anything that would suit you any better outside the Army?
No. And in retrospect, I know it was the best thing for me.
And let's go ahead, Ann.
Well, it gave me opportunities that no little girl from South Georgia would expect.
Mm-hmm.
For promotion, for education, for travel, for doing work.
It fit you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And people who knew me said people said, what's your mother say about you joining the Army? I said, she knows how she raised me. And she was very happy with my being in the Army.
Was she really?
Oh, yes.
Was she proud of you?
Oh, yes. Very much.
I'll bet she was.
She died just a few weeks before I found out I was being promoted to major. And but people said, well, she didn't doubt it. She wouldn't question it. But
mm-hmm. I'm sure.
One of the things I found in the Army that suits me is you know your limits. It's as if you're in a box. And you can ramble around in that box all you want to. And when you run up against the edge, you know it. And if you go outside that box, you know what's going to happen to you. So I like it. There is a discipline I like, but there is also freedom.
But those defined parameters sort of help structure the way.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And let's take a break.